Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hydro One's virtual live discussion for the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line Project. We are live tonight with Hydro One and joined by hundreds of residents listening in. During tonight's session, you will hear from Hydro One's team and have an opportunity to participate in a live Q&A session. To ask a question live this evening, you can either simply press 3 on your phone's keypad at any time or visit www.hydro1meeting.ca. where you will be able to both view our presentation and submit a question via the submission box on the right-hand side. My name is Eric, and I'll be facilitating the event this evening. During this live session, we encourage you to get involved and to ask questions. Again, you can ask live questions at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad or by submitting a question via the submission box located on the website, hydro1meeting.ca. At that time, we will take your name and place you in the question queue. Now, we're still having new people join us. I want to welcome everyone to Hydro One's virtual live discussion for the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line Project. We are live tonight with Hydro One and are joined by hundreds of residents listening in. We want to remind everyone that you can ask a live question at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad or by visiting www.hydro1meeting.ca, where you'll be able to view the presentation and submit a question via the submission box and on the right-hand side. Media are welcome to listen to tonight's virtual session and can follow up with Hydro One's media relations team at media.relations@hydroone.com for any of their questions. Now, at this time, I'm going to introduce Daniel Levitan, Vice President of Stakeholder Relations at Hydro One, to open the session. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you very much, Eric. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining Hydro One's virtual live discussion for the new Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line Project. As you heard, my name is Daniel Levitan, and I'm the Vice President of Stakeholder Relations at Hydro One. Tonight, I'm joined on the phone by my colleagues and members of the project team, who you may recognize from our last sessions. I have Sunny Karanakaran, Director of Project Delivery, John Chadwick, Manager, Environmental Services, Dana Gardner, Manager of Community Relations, Andrew Lewis, Senior Real Estate Coordinator, and Sarah Jane Soulier, Senior Advisor of Indigenous Relations. Before we get started with tonight's project update, I wanted to take a quick moment to recognize the challenges this last year has created for all of us and acknowledge that we are in this together and Hydro One is here to support our customers and the communities where we live and work in any way we can to keep the lights on and support those that are experiencing hardship during the pandemic. If you do need assistance as a customer, all you have to do is get in touch with us through our customer service line. I encourage you to visit our website to learn more about our Connected for Life program. Just do be in touch, and obviously we're there for you. On behalf of our team, we're pleased to be here virtually as we reach a significant milestone in the Chatham to Lakeshore Line project. Having now selected a preferred route following a year-long consultation and evaluation process, I do want to stress, though, that this is an important milestone. We are still at the beginning of a marathon when it comes to public consultation and engagement, and we will be here through the remainder of the environmental assessment phase, construction phase, and beyond when we flip the switch and energize the line. So engagement consultation from a Hydro One perspective does not stop, but this is an important milestone. And we want to accomplish a few things with tonight's live discussion. The first is we want to ensure that you hear up-to-date information directly from our team and learn more about how we arrived at this milestone. We want to share how we will continue our close work with you, communities, and businesses. And thirdly, we want to ensure that you have an opportunity to ask questions following our presentation. In the southwestern region of the province and across Ontario, Hydro One is responsible for building an electricity network that supports our customers both now and into the future. By working alongside our electricity partners, it's our job to make sure that the power is available where and when it's needed to support businesses and community growth. And this new transmission line will accommodate the significant need in the region, as we've discussed in previous calls, as well as improve reliability for homes and businesses and support local industries. Now, I mentioned a moment ago Tonight, we are going to talk about the preferred route for the new transmission line and review our next steps in working with landowners and also articulate how we arrived at that preferred route. So since starting our development work on the line last January, we have been busy learning more about each of the different route alternatives from those who work and reside in the area. Having had the opportunity to hear directly from residents, members of council and area associations myself, I know that the information we've heard has been valuable to our planning process and has taught us what's important to consider when building this line. And we want to thank everyone for their participation and engagement in the project so far, and of course encourage you to remain engaged as we proceed through the next steps of this project. I also want to take a moment to emphasize that selecting a preferred route that extends just under 50 kilometers is never an easy decision, nor something that we take lightly here at Hydro One. While we are one step closer to supporting the incredible industry and community growth in the region, we recognize that many community members will have questions about the selection. And if there's one thing I can't stress enough, it's that the conversation is not over, and we will continue to work closely with community members in a fair, flexible, and transparent manner, as your feedback is going to be critical in the next step of the project, as it has been to date. With that in mind, I'd like to remind you that following our presentation this evening, we will provide an opportunity to ask questions to our project team that are on the call. And I encourage you to submit a question by pressing 3 on your telephone's keypad or in our online question submission box at any time. If we are unable to get to your question, please reach out to our team. You can submit a question online. You can give us a call. Every question will be answered. In addition to tonight's event, we also encourage you to visit our second virtual open house, which launched a few weeks ago. On this website, you can find a series of interactive information boards similar to the experience of our in-person events. Of course, should you feel that there is more that we can do to supplement in-person gatherings to make sure that we are as engaged as possible, we'd love to hear from you. I'm now going to turn it over to Dana Gardner, Manager of Community Relations, who will share further information on this milestone.
Thank you, Dan, and to everyone for joining us this evening. So as we begin this portion of the evening, I will be referring to the presentation deck, which you can find online at www.hydro1meeting.ca. If you want to meet me on slide 2, I will prompt you as I move through each slide. I want to spend the next several minutes walking you through the preferred route selected for the project, how the input and feedback we received over the past year helped guide this decision, and how our team will continue to work closely with landowners and community members to inform project next steps, as Dan mentioned. Please join me on slide 3. As a friendly reminder, there are 2 ways you can participate with us this evening. You may submit a question by pressing 3 on your phone keypad at any time, or via the question submission box on your screen if you are viewing the presentation. As a reminder, these questions will be addressed in the second portion of the meeting with our panel members. Please join me on slide 4. As Dan mentioned, we work closely with electricity partners across Ontario, such as the Independent Electricity System Operator, also known as the IESO, who is responsible for electricity planning in the province. As we've previously highlighted, due to the significant amount of growth expected for Essex County and the surrounding region, the IESO requested we begin work to build a new transmission line between our facilities in Chatham and Lakeshore, required for 2025. Our first step in planning for this new line began in January of last year when we kicked off the class environmental assessment. Please move to slide 5. I want to speak briefly on how this project is expected to support the region. Once built, this line will add more power equivalent to energizing a city the size of Windsor in the area. This will help support local industries who are looking to expand and will also reinforce the overall electricity system, ensuring you have even more reliable power. Additionally, as one of the largest electricity infrastructure projects in the region, it will help support the local economy and communities by creating new direct and spin-off jobs and training opportunities. If you turn to slide 6, I'll provide an update on where we are in the class environmental assessment process, also known as the class EA. Again, this process is used to plan electricity infrastructure projects with consideration for the communities where the project is being planned. If you're following along online, you will see a diagram on this slide which highlights the critical steps of this process from start to finish and also where we are. Based on this process and our review of the route alternatives, we've selected a preferred route to build transmission line from point A to point B. Please turn to slide 7. On this slide, you will see a map of the preferred route selected. Route alternative 2A has been selected based on the consultation and evaluation we've completed over the past year. I want to take some time to walk you through the evaluation process used to arrive at this decision. For a zoomed-in view of the route, I also encourage you to visit our interactive map available on our project website or at the link shown on the side of the screen if you're viewing the presentation. Please meet me on slide 8. To compare the advantages and disadvantages of each route alternative, an evaluation framework was developed. Our team created opportunities to collect input from a wide variety of community members. This included First Nation communities, farmers, elected officials, businesses, and many others. This feedback helped us compare route alternatives across the following 4 categories: socioeconomic environment, natural environment, technical and cost, and First Nation culture, values, and land use. Please meet me on slide 9. I just want to take a quick opportunity to revisit the 3 alternatives that we began evaluating last year. You may remember we were looking at 3 primary route alternatives and their associated variations. If you are viewing our map, you will see route alternative 1 and its 4 variations shown in yellow, route alternative 2 and its 3 variations shown in red, and route alternative 3 shown in purple. Before I share some input and feedback we received over the past year, I just want to remind everyone that you may submit a question for our panel at any time throughout this presentation by pressing 3 on the keypad or through the online submission box. Please turn to slide 10. As Dan and I have both alluded to, the decision-making process to get to where we are today has been rooted in incorporating local knowledge and intel. Our team has heard directly from many community members through past virtual discussions, through corresponding with community members by phone or email or video conference calls, as well as working directly with agencies, municipalities, and associations who have formed our technical advisory committee. Through these discussions, some of the key feedback themes we heard included that effects to agricultural operations should be a key consideration, that opportunities to both repurpose existing utility corridors and parallel with other linear infrastructure should be prioritized, that certain setback distances from the Highway 401 corridor and interchanges provided by the MTO must be maintained, and that proximity to First Nation areas that support fishing, hunting, and trapping, as well as identified areas of historical significance, should be considered. To demonstrate how this feedback was incorporated into the evaluation process, I just want to speak to one reoccurring theme we heard, which was the importance of considering effects to the agricultural community and agricultural operations. In our conversations with those who farm land, they share concerns related to soil compaction, the potential damage to tile drains, as well as the difficulty of maneuvering farm equipment around our towers. given the feedback we received in this area, effects to agricultural operations was the heaviest weighted criterion within the socioeconomic environmental category which it falls under. To ensure these types of concerns were considered in our evaluation, for each route, we measured the total area or footprint that would be required to build the line on agricultural land, and we also looked at opportunities to make use of existing corridors. If you turn to slide 11, you will see a visual depiction of how each of the routes and their variations scored in comparison to one another. While we knew there were advantages and disadvantages to each of the routes, you will see that Route 2A in its entirety scored the highest in three of the four evaluation categories assessed. This included the natural environment, socioeconomic environment, and First Nation culture, values, and land use. Please meet me on slide 12. One of the key benefits of Route 2A is that it allows us to repurpose roughly one-third of the total line length of an existing transmission line that is not currently operating. This largely minimizes overall effects to items we looked at within the natural and socioeconomic environment. As I mentioned, a key theme we heard was the importance of considering effects to agricultural operations, and reusing this idle line helps reduce the total new corridor footprint required for the project, also resulting in fewer towers needed on agricultural fields. Again, while each route had its own advantages and disadvantages, some of the other overall benefits of Route 2A across the categories included, within the natural environment, the route crossed a low amount of vegetation that could interfere with our lines, as well as crossing a low amount of potential species at risk habitat. Within the socioeconomic category, it crossed a low amount of areas identified to have archaeological potential and also avoided a National Historic Site of Canada, in addition to the benefits I described above. Under technical and cost, it crosses the fewest property parcels and farms and also parallels additional infrastructure, including the 401 and existing transmission lines for another roughly one-third of the full route. And under First Nation culture, values, and land use, the route balances the proximity of areas we heard were of historical significance while also paralleling existing infrastructure, minimalizing effects to natural environmental features. If you would like more information on the comparison of routes, we encourage you to reach out to our community relations team. Please turn to slide 13. We do recognize that planning and building a new line will create change for landowners and that community members will have questions. I want to emphasize that while we have reached this milestone, our team remains committed to working closely with landowners and community members. Beginning tomorrow, our team of dedicated real estate representatives we'll begin to reach out to landowners along Route 2A to schedule introductory meetings. During these meetings, representatives will review planned steps in the process to obtain new land rights for the line. We will also introduce what we refer to as our land acquisition compensation principles. Please turn to slide 14. The land acquisition compensation principles will be used as a roadmap to guide our conversations on land discussions. These principles are based on our past experience, but they have also been tailored to consider local characteristics and feedback that we've heard from you over the last several months. We will work with property owners to offer choice, independent valuation, incentives, and reimbursement for damage to construction-related activities that cannot be mitigated. Please turn to slide 15. Over the next several months, our team will also work closely with landowners and community members, continuing to capture local knowledge and expertise as we move forward with next steps. More specifically, our efforts will focus on designing the line within the preferred route location, including the corridor width and identifying tower location and structure types. We will also identify mitigation measures to help reduce potential effects during construction. We will begin capturing this information through conversations our real estate representatives will soon begin. In addition, our team will also work towards preparing the draft environmental study report, one of the final steps to the Class EA process, and this report will summarize our work completed and will also be available for a public review and comment period later this spring. And before we move into the Q&A portion in just a second, I just want to turn to slide 16 to speak to where we are in the broader context of the project. In addition to our work to complete the EA and plan for the design, we will also be seeking approval from the Ontario Energy Board for construction, which we plan to apply for in late 2021. Following project approvals, we will be looking to begin construction in 2023 to 2024 to meet the energy needs in the region as quickly as possible. We will now move to the second portion of our meeting, a discussion with members of our project team. As a reminder, on the panel this evening, we have Dan Levitan, Vice President of Stakeholder Relations, Sunny Karunakaran, Director, Project Delivery, John Chadwick, Manager, Environmental Services, Andrew Lewis, Senior Advisor, Real Estate, and Sarah Jane Soulier, Senior Advisor, Indigenous Relations. Before we open up the floor to live questions from our audience, I will ask a few of our panelists to touch on a few reoccurring questions we've received in advance of this evening. We will then open up the floor to questions received from the phone and via the question submission box. To start, Sunny, I'm wondering if you can speak to whether any additional refinements will be made to the selected preferred route location.
Thank you very much for the question, Dina. When planning and building new electricity infrastructure, we are committed to ensuring local feedback and knowledge is incorporated into the decision-making process. Our team has had the opportunity to hear from community members, farmers, First Nations communities, and members of council, all of which has been invaluable to our planning process and helped highlight what's important to community members. We're appreciative of the fact that we've been able to reach out to more than 1,500 residents over the past year and collect feedback. So a big thank you to all of you for sharing your comments. A key component of the Class EA process was ensuring that the evaluation of each route was done fairly and through a balanced framework, which considered the feedback over the entire length of the proposed route. That is why we look at the cumulative advantages and disadvantages of each option. Accordingly, Route 2A has been selected as the preferred option for the Chatham to Lakeshore project. Now that we've selected a preferred route, we will begin designing the new line and towers within the preferred route location. During this process, we will be working directly with landowners whose properties the line will traverse. Starting tomorrow, our real estate representatives will make contact with these landowners to learn more about their individual property features. During these discussions, we can get a better understanding of the property-specific effects from the line, work together to best avoid, mitigate, or prevent against effects.
We'll have our hosts online again in just a moment. I want to remind everyone who is currently joining us that you can press 3 to ask a live question at any time during the discussion. Someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. You can also visit www.hydro1meeting.ca. There you're able to view the presentation and submit a question via the submission box on the right-hand side. Sunny, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Please continue.
Uh-huh. Sorry, my phone had disconnected, but when I was actually speaking through to that last question, I finished the response.
Thank you very much, Sunny. We're getting the other members of the panel on again in just a moment. Again, I want to remind everyone who is joining us that you can press 3 to ask a live question during the event this evening. It's Hydro One's virtual live discussion for the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line project. We're live tonight with Hydro One and joined by hundreds of residents listening in. During tonight's session, you will hear from Hydro One's team and have an opportunity to participate in a live Q&A portion coming up in a moment. I believe we are going to go now to Alan. Alan, please go ahead.
Hi. My question is, I'm curious to find out whether Hydro One's going to use contractors or direct staff to complete this project. And the reason why I ask is I'm a shareholder, and I'm just concerned about costs when work is contracted out.
And Sunny, I'm going to turn that question over to you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dana. Thank you a lot for the question, Alan. So, in line with our policy of delivery of greenfield transmission projects, this project has been targeted for delivery with the use of some of our EPC partners, the EPC being engineering, procurement, and construction partners. So in planning out this works, we've actually engaged upon the services of two EPC contracting partners that has been competitively bid and selected to help us complete out the development stage activities and bring forward some of their technical engineering and construction expertise and knowledge to complement that Hydro One also possesses to ensure that we're coming up with the best technical and cost-effective solution for the delivery of this works. Through that ECI delivery model, we will also be having engagements with a number of local businesses and to act as subcontractors to the actual general contractor, along with opportunities for economic participation to First Nations businesses and other local companies. Through that, we are confident that we will be able to deliver a technically sound and cost-effective solution to realize this project. Thank you very much for your question.
Alan, thank you very much for your live question. We have an online question that has been submitted that I'm going to read out now. Just before we get to that, a reminder to everyone to press 3 on your phone's keypad if you'd like to ask a live question. You can also go to www.hydro1meeting.ca and submit a question via the text submission box on the right-hand side. This is an online question that came from Glenn, and the question is, will the old line between Chatham and Tilbury be removed?
And Sunny, I'm going to turn that question over to you.
I can take that one, Dana. John here.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Go ahead, John.
Sorry, Sunny. Yes, the answer to that question is yes, and that's one of the major advantages of Route 2A is that it was able to repurpose approximately 16 kilometers of an existing idle line, which equates to nearly one-third of the total new right-of-way. So for that section, which is essentially just east of Tilbury all the way over to just east of Dillon Road, that is a idle line, which we are able to actually remove and take away those towers and then institute the new line in those locations. So it will actually result in the same amount, if not a net negative or less number of towers in that stretch due to the fact that 230 kilovolt lines, you typically have longer spans. I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Glenn, for that question. Up next, we have a live question. It is Grace who's joining us live now. Grace, welcome. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Grace Mullen, and I am a fourth-generation farmer in the Comber area, community board member, and future Comber developer. In the Chatham This Week newspaper from Thursday, March 4, 2021, Daniel Levitin, Hydro One's Vice President of Stakeholder Relations, is quoted the following. While a lot of staff will be looking at environmental impacts and impacts to prime agricultural land, there is a tremendous amount of consultation going on at the same time. He said, we've consulted with over 6,000 people in the region to get feedback that results in the choice of 2A as a route, close quote. There is a group of 25-plus stakeholders, including farmers and landowners, such as myself, from Chatham to Lakeshore, that are on this call. Myself, as a spokesperson for this group, can tell you and everyone on this call for a fact, none of us were ever consulted or asked for our opinion on the route options. None of us even know anyone locally that were ever consulted. Who were these 6,000 people consulted, and why did you not include the farmers, the actual caretakers of the land?
Thank you for that question. Dan, I'm going to turn that over to you, and then John, maybe you can expand on some of the work over the last year.
Sure, happy to. So I guess, you know, I might pass it over to John to talk a little bit more in depth on the consultation process itself. We did two community information sessions similar to these. There were a number of meetings with council. We fielded, and Dana can correct me, a few hundred questions online and calls to our community lines. And I know that there were several meetings on various sites. Sunny and I in particular met with a group of farmers out in the Chatham area and discussed a number of topics that found their way into the environmental assessment and the project plan related to specific farmer concerns, including how equipment needs to operate on the land, how land is utilized, and some of the considerations we will have to make as we get closer to, to real estate discussions. We've also been engaging with the Ontario Federation of Agriculture to help provide advice and to ensure that they can tee up their membership to engage with us. So while obviously we cannot consult with everyone and reach out to everyone, the effort is to ensure that everyone knows that we are out there. There are forums like this one to engage with us and to make those options available. So in short, before I pass it over to John, is certainly happy to meet with you and your group, either in a larger setting or a smaller one, to hear your specific concerns. And in particular, want to ensure that that this line, as it's built, takes all considerations of the importance of agriculture in the region and any local knowledge and industry knowledge that can be helpful in arriving at the best possible solution. I'll pass it over to John.
Thanks, Dan, and thank you, Grace, for the perspective. Look, we recognize as a project team that any selection is going to present a range of opinions and perspectives. And we've taken extensive efforts ensuring a rigorous, fair, and transparent and holistic evaluation process. And from the project outset, we've said that while we can't promise that everyone will be happy with the selection, we do promise that we would listen and consider everyone's feedback. This process has involved over 80,000 direct notices via ad mail. There is newspaper ads, radio ads, three community information centers, numerous in-person meetings with various subgroups and individuals and farmers along the route. So where we started with this meeting, and I wanted to reiterate that, was a collective thank you to so many of you who have participated in this Class EA process thus far. For the last year, we've been engaged in having these conversations. And whether it was through those community information centers like this today, the Technical Advisory Committee, which was a diverse group of technical associations and interest groups, individual meetings, and other correspondence. That feedback has been instrumental to shape the evaluation categories themselves the sub-criteria, the weightings and how we evaluated this, and ultimately how we reached this milestone of selecting the preferred alternative. So the Class E process is a step-by-step process. It's the legal planning framework in Ontario for transmission infrastructure, and it has been going on for the last year. We do regret the fact, Grace, that you haven't felt engaged in the process. So for Dan's comments, certainly excited and interested to continue that conversation with you and your colleagues. But this is where we are today through the process, and look forward to those conversations with specifically now we turn our minds to the preferred route. And those conversations are starting as early as tomorrow through our real estate representatives. So please share that information on a property specific information that we can take back and incorporate further into this process. Thank you.
Grace, thank you again for those questions. Now we have another online question that was submitted, and I want to let you know how you can ask an online question. You can go to www.hydro1meeting.ca and you can ask a text question via our submission box located on the website. Also, you can press 3 on your phone's keypad if you'd like to ask a live question on the town hall virtual live discussion this evening. Up next, we have a question from Bernie that was submitted online. What will the towers to be constructed look like?
Thank you for that question. And Sunny, I'll turn that one over to you.
Thank you very much for that question, Bernie. So we're at the beginning of the actual design process now that we have a preferred route that's been selected. So there's going to be specifics around the actual location for each of the structures that is going to make a determination as to what that specific structure configuration would look like. Typically for a line of this nature, we would expect that it would come out as a lattice tower style arrangement. The exact geometry of it, the height and breadth and so forth, as I said, will come out of the actual design process, but they won't be very dissimilar to other lattice structures that you're seeing within the region. Thank you very much for your question.
Bernie, thank you again for that question. We're going to go directly to another online question that has been submitted. This one is going to be from David. David asks, will the current line be removed prior to beginning construction?
And thank you for that question. And I'll turn that over to John.
Yes, thank you for that. We will certainly be discussing that further into the design stage with the early contractor involvement from the two EPC contractors. Typically that would be sequential. And so it's expected for the idle line portion, the 16 kilometers that I mentioned previously, that would be removed. But we'll have more information as we finalize the design on this process for that. But just to confirm, that line will be removed. It's just, I think this question was about sequencing, so I just wanted to make sure that is a logical sequence. But again, too early to confirm exact staging and sequencing of all components at this stage.
David, thank you very much for that question. We have another online question that has been submitted. This one is from Daniel, and the question is, are the damaged tile drains going to be repaired by a licensed drainage contractor or landowner?
Thank you for that question. And John, I'm going to turn that one over to you.
Sure. Thanks, Dana. Thanks, Dana. And thanks, Daniel. So, Daniel, yes, we've heard from many local farmers on this project, and we want to have people assured that effects to agricultural lands and operations have been top of mind for this project team. We understand that farmers are the subject matter experts on their land, and that we understand it represents your livelihood. So we want you there as partners to directly inform best mitigation practices and strategies. So we've heard concerns like this expressed over soil compaction, potential damage to tile drains, overhead clearance restrictions, and maneuverability of large equipment. They're all things that we're hearing from the farming community, and we've been taking notes. The effects to agriculture was a key consideration in the evaluation process overall, and it actually, as Dana mentioned in her presentation, resulted in it being the most heavily weighed criterion. Now that we have a selection, we can really turn our minds to further assessment of those effects and the mitigation at the property level along the preferred route. And as I mentioned, we have a team that will be starting site-specific discussions with landowners as early as tomorrow. Please share that information with those representatives so we can take that information back. But I want you to know that where avoidance is not possible and there is resulting damage, Hydroland's committed to repairing fully that damage and with your involvement until we get it right. And we would only use professionally licensed contractors to execute that type of work. Thanks, Daniel.
Daniel, thank you again for that question. Again, a reminder to everyone, if you'd like to ask a live question, you can press 3 on your phone's keypad, or you can submit a question via our submission box located on the website, hydro1meeting.ca, www.hydro1meeting.ca. Another question that's been submitted by text is, will Hydro One be removing the existing towers along a portion of preferred route 2A?
And John, I'll turn that over to you.
Sure. Thanks, Dana. This question has, I think I've answered this question already, but I'm happy to do it again. There is a 16-kilometer span of which on Route 2A, which has been selected as a preferred alternative. That span is just east of Tilbury and ends just east of Dillon Road. And it's currently an idle 115-kilovolt line of Hydro One's. We've recognized a very great opportunity here to remove that line in installing this new line. So those towers will be removed along that section. I hope that answers the question.
Up next, we have another online question that's been submitted by Brent. The question is, why was this route chosen over number 3? As this route affects two towns, Tilbury and Comber, Route 3 appears to miss towns.
And thank you for the question. And John, I'm going to turn that one over to you again.
Absolutely. So first I'll reiterate, and I don't have, I'm hoping that some of you still have Dana's presentation up in front of you, but in the star chart there, you'll see that 2A scored the best in 3 of the 4 categories. In addition to repurposing that idle line for those 16 kilometers, it resulted in the least amount of new right-of-way on agricultural land. And just like to remind everyone that we heard that loud and clear, and that was ended up being the most heavily weighed criterion. It had the lowest total, it would result in the lowest total number of towers on agricultural land. It traversed the fewest number of properties. It was also very favorable from a natural environment perspective by traversing a low amount of woodlots and vegetated buffer areas, and as well as potential species at risk habitat. And it also traversed the least number of water courses, which are obviously areas of fish habitat. And it had a low amount of identified archaeological potential and was able to avoid even the National Historic Site in the Buxton Settlement area. So when we compare that with Route 3 scored moderately in natural environment and technical and cost, as well as the First Nation culture values and land use categories, but it scored the lowest overall in socioeconomic, which included the agricultural impacts. So because Route 3 is almost entirely greenfield route, it's not able to parallel or repurpose any existing infrastructure, and it traverses the most number of water courses and has a relatively large effect to woodlots. It also scored the lowest on agricultural operations because of the footprint of agricultural lands that it would occupy. I hope that draws a nice parallel as to holistically why this resulted in that decision. And again, just want to reiterate, that is not one of these routes on its own scored the best in every single category or their sub-criteria. That would be impossible. We'd be talking 25 to 30 criteria. So they all had strengths and weaknesses, but by far 2A had far more strengths and advantages compared to its disadvantages. So when we look at that holistically and the cumulative effect of that picture, 2A was a strong winner. Thank you for the question.
Brent, thank you again for that question. Up next, another question that has been submitted by text is, would Hydro One consider burying the line in some sections to avoid disruption?
And thank you for the question. And Sunny, I'll turn that one over to you.
Thank you for the question. As part of the planning process, Hydro One considers various construction options for the completion of a project of this nature. When we start thinking about burying power lines, either in a tunnel or within a duct bank, as we must remember that this is a 230-kilovolt transmission line. There are many factors that needed to be taken into consideration. This includes the technical practicality of actually performing the construction, the disruption to the surface environment as well as the subsurface conditions through excavations, considerations around access for carrying out any maintenance and future repairs that may need to be done, as well as factoring in the cost elements associated with this. When holistically considering all of those factors, it was determined that for a project of this nature, which is a new transmission line that's just under 50 kilometres in length, an overhead line would provide the best value option for all people.
Up next, we have another online question that has been submitted by Leo, and the question is, what's the required setback from the 401?
Thank you for the question. And John, can I ask you to speak to that?
Yes. Thanks for that one, Leo. And it's actually an important point because the provincial policy statement and, in general, good planning practice for linear infrastructure is to try to parallel other linear infrastructure wherever possible, notwithstanding the other effects that need to be considered in lieu of that. With respect to the 401, the real situation there, the benefit of trying to parallel the 401 turned out to not nearly be as advantageous as paralleling an existing transmission line, and especially not one that a third of it could have been replaced. With respect to setback distances, our discussions with MTO actually resulted in approximately 30 meters of a setback distance to the edge of the right-of-way. And when we looked at that, and especially considering some of the MTO's project plans in the area, not of which examples include the Bloomfield Road interchange and other areas, and other work and projects involving 401 itself and the corridor, which speaks to the growth in the region, we were soon realizing that this paralleling route was needing to be pushed out quite far from the actual highway, and any advantages of right-of-way overlaps were being lost. So that quickly turned into Route 2C, which was the route that paralleled the 401 for the most of it, becoming essentially more akin to Route 3, which was a greenfield route, and had those same negative effects to agricultural properties in general. So that's the overall big picture around what challenged us with the 401 corridor paralleling, and the specific setback distances that we were working with the MTO on were 30 meters from the edge of the right-of-way. Thanks for that.
Up next, we have another online question that has been submitted from Heather. The question is, can we farm the land around the towers?
Thanks for that question, Heather. Andrew, I'll turn that over to you.
Hi, guys. Heather, thank you so much for the question. Before I dive in, though, I just want to kind of remind everyone that landowners directly impacted by the preferred route will be receiving a package introducing them to their dedicated real estate representatives, as well as a copy of Hydro One's land acquisition compensation principles. These project-specific land acquisition compensation principles will act as a roadmap to guide discussions with your dedicated real estate representatives. And as your main point of contact, real estate representatives will be calling landowners starting tomorrow to set up a meeting to discuss next steps. Going back to Heather's question, farming is definitely a compatible use within the transmission corridor. And across the province, farmers are working fields every day traversed by one of our transmission lines. To expand on some farming effects, as my colleague John stated a little earlier, Hydro One's focus is to definitely mitigate construction impacts as much as possible. And Hydro One will compensate landowners for cropland out of production during and post-construction, with payment recognizing compaction of the lands years after construction is completed. This cropland out of production program is specific to this project Now, it's been designed taking into account community input that arose from previous community information center sessions and other points of outreach. Property-specific questions pertaining to this program can be further reviewed and discussed with your dedicated real estate representative at your upcoming meetings. So thank you for the question, and Hydro One is committed to working closely with landowners in a fair, consistent, and transparent manner.
Heather, thank you again for that question. Another question that has been submitted is, how will the construction of the new line impact electricity rates?
Thanks for that question. And Dan, I'm going to turn that question over to you.
Sure thing. It's a good question and something we talked about in our last session as well. It's almost worth starting with a principle, which is the more energy consumers there are in the system, the lower the fixed costs of the overall energy system become. So you got more people using more power. That also means that individual bills go down. And as we've said, while there is a lot of community growth that is associated with this line, one of those growth elements is a rather significant greenhouse industry in Southwest Ontario, and those are large power consumers. So once the line is energized, the effect will be very positive for rates, while at the same time, transmission infrastructure is amortized over a period of time. So while the actual rate impact is something that will be determined by the Ontario Energy Board through their leave to construct process and obviously further refining of the project plan, by and large, there is no better way to help reduce rates across the province for all customers than by building large infrastructure like this transmission line that facilitates community and industry growth.
Up next, we have another online question that has been submitted, and that question is coming up from Marie. And the question is, will the new towers be larger in size than the existing one?
Thank you for the question, Marie. And John, I'm going to turn that question over to you.
Sure. Thanks, Marie, for the question. The short answer to that is yes, it's expected that they would be. The existing line, both the line that is currently in operation, that is paralleled by part of 2A, as well as the part of the line that 2A will be replacing, which is idle, both 115 kV or kilovolt lines. So generally, towers that carry those lines are a little bit smaller than towers that would carry 230 kilovolt double circuit lines like the one that this project is ultimately constructing. So the short answer is yes. And our design team will continue to consider opportunities as we move into that stage as to having those towers line up in the most favorable technical way. And of course, having those conversations at the property specific level with the real estate representatives so we can take that input back and have that inform the process as much as possible. Thanks, Marie.
Up next, we have another online question that is coming up. It was submitted by Heather, and the question is, will you restore the land to its original condition? What if we have crops planted in the area you are building on, and will we have advance notice of construction?
And thanks for that question. And John, I'm going to start with you, and then Andrew, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Tina. Absolutely, you'll be receiving advance notice of construction. And as Dan mentioned at the beginning, this consultation, it's anticipated to continue for the entirety of the project. Hydro One wants to be partners with the community and with landowners. So these conversations will definitely continue. And some people will be even having some of these conversations starting tomorrow, hopefully, with the real estate representative. And as I mentioned earlier, absolutely Hydro One's committed to wherever we cannot avoid or mitigate any impacts to land, that we are committed to fully repairing any damage with your involvement to make sure that we get it right. So please, I know this is, it's always concerning when we're looking at lines traversing your property, but we'll be there every step of the way with you, and we're definitely committed to making it right and fixing any problems or damage that's caused. Andrew, I can pass it over to you now.
Yeah, thanks, John. No, once again, just hitting on those points with respect to mitigating construction impacts. So directly impacted landowners, they'll have an opportunity to work with their dedicated real estate representative who will communicate access onto the property, which will be, of course, communicated to the landowner. With respect to that, our crop loss out of production program, I mean, as I did indicate, we are compensating landowners for payment during and post-construction. And we will get into some more details with respect to that program in those one-on-one discussions with the dedicated real estate representatives, which will start who will start reaching out starting tomorrow. So thanks again for your question, Heather. Appreciate it.
Up next, we have an online question that was submitted by Claire. The question is, will you consider tweaking the proposed route and consider following property lines and or roadways versus traversing fields and properties on a diagonal?
And thank you for that question. And Sunny, I'll turn that one to you.
Thank you very much for the question, Diana, and thank you, Claire, for submitting the question. As we move into the designing phase now on this line, some flexibility may be considered on a property-by-property basis to best mitigate any effects of the property as the property is traversed by the line, where it is deemed to be practical and feasible. For example, there could be slight deviations within the right-of-way to bring towers closer to the road, consider other infrastructure, locations to vicinity to housing and so forth. And this could include things like considering larger spans or spacing distances. While we will take the feedback for consideration in the design process, we remain confident in the evaluation process that we have to date that has given us this preferred route. We look forward to actually working with each of the individual property owners through our real estate representatives, and we'll give each of those pieces of feedback consideration during the actual process of design. Thank you very much.
Claire, thank you again for that question that you submitted. Now, we're actually just about reaching the end of our live discussion. Daniel, with the last couple of minutes, did you want to share some closing remarks?
Sure thing, Eric. Now, firstly, I just want to thank everyone for taking the time to join us this evening to learn more about the Chatham to Lakeshore Transmission Line project. Speaking on behalf of our team at Hydro One, we not only appreciate, but we deeply value having the opportunity to hear directly from you tonight. And these aren't all easy questions, as you heard on the phone. We are committed to making sure that as we further refine the project and move, you know, closer to getting shovels in the ground, to engage as often and in as many forums as possible. This is but one touch point. So, you know, for those property owners that, or groups or, you know, obviously, elected officials, et cetera, that want to have further discussions, you know, please make sure that you contact us directly, you know, at our website, community.relations@hydro1.com or on our phone line, 1-877-345-6799. You can find all that information online as well. So those of who may have the new line located on the property, I do want to reiterate, can expect to start hearing from our team beginning tomorrow. And as we have mentioned throughout tonight's session, this is just another step, a very, very important one. And your feedback continues to be an important part of the planning and development process for this line. So we look forward to continuing to work with you. We thank you so much for your time. And want to thank you and wish you a safe and good evening.
Thank you again to everyone joining us. As mentioned before, if you have any questions or feedback that you would like to share with the project team, you can do so through emailing HydroOne at community.relations@hydroone.com or by calling 1-877-345-6799. Thank you again to everyone for joining us this evening, and have a good night.